Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Apples and Junos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grudnibblink, and I will be your host. And of course, I have your friend and mine, Blake Creamer, with me. Blake, how are you doing today?
Very good. Very good. Happy Easter, buddy. How was your morning with the family? You feel good or what?
It was great. Yeah. Got out for a walk this afternoon and only three meltdowns, I think, between the two kids. So, you know, all in all, I'd consider that progress for a 2-hour outing to the park. So
what are the rate stats on that? That's 1.5 per six. I don't know. Yeah, we'll figure that out. We'll get a website set up. That's not too bad, man. Three meltdowns. You're winning. You're winning at life.
Familystatrick.com. I'll check on that.
Get that. Let's trademark that. That's awesome. Buddy, my son is hilarious. Any holiday he thinks is like the greatest thing in the world. And in his mind, Easter is like better than Christmas because he just likes searching for things. So he's just out of his gourd. And then you throw the chocolate on top of that. And yeah, we're just, we're having a wild time over here. He gets excited about St. Patrick's Day, for God's sake. I mean, unless you're, in your first year of college, like what are we doing? Let's have some green beer. My son. Yeah. He's just like, here we go. And that's fine. It's nice.
All right. Well, this week we're doing something a little different, Blake. We're gonna, instead of doing what we have been doing, the hot and cold and performing well, performing poorly segments, we're going to do a mailbag episode. So we put out the call on Discord and on Twitter over the last day or so and tried to get some responses in, some listener questions. And obviously, if there's any in the chat here, we'll get to those as well. But basically, I asked for questions along three different lines. First, some strategy topics, anything kind of general strategy related. Anybody who had some last second week 25 roster decisions to make, threw that in here as well. And then also, and the thing that got the most interest out of people was the individual players and their projections for next year, how we're viewing them after this year. If this year was an aberration, how much stock, I guess, we're putting into what they did on the ice this past season. So that's the plan. But first, we have to do two truths and a lie. I believe that after last week's Sterling Game 7 performance, I am up 4-3 in the series. Can you confirm or deny this, Mr. Cream?
Yeah, I know. Allegedly, right? But, how people could come up with statistics to prove anything. I mean, 14% of all people know that, right, Nate? So, that's where we're at with that. But yeah, that could be true. All right.
All right, so let's get into it. I think you're up. Hit me with what you got. See if you can mess me up with this one.
I'm up. Okay. So, this is the eighth, edition here. So, Nate and I had a conversation, and we're just going double or nothing, right? So basically, the winner of this, did you ever do this with any siblings? Like, be like, oh, no, this is the one. Whoever wins
this is the
winner. Yeah. So that's sort of where it's double or nothing right here. That's confirmed by Nate. I have the texts. I have the receipts. Okay. All right. Two truths and a lie. We're doing team edition. All right. Just to wrap it up here, a little general stuff. Anyways, let's get into it. Number one, the Philadelphia Flyers have more shorthanded goals on the season than the Dallas Stars. All right, think about that.
Okay.
Number two, the Vancouver Canucks have more scoring chances for per 60 on the power play than the Boston Bruins. Okay. Mm-hmm. Think about that. All right, the record-setting Boston Bruins. All right, 63 wins tonight. Well done. And then number three, at even strength, Colorado Avalanche have more expected goals for per 60 than the Nashville Predators. Oh my goodness. This is craziness. What's going on?
All right. So it feels like you tossed me a pretty obvious either red herring or double negative here, where you're trying to get me to think this is the one and then trying to get me to not think it's the one. At even strength, the Colorado Avalanche have more expected goals for per 60 than the Nashville Predators. On the surface of things, you would say that's obvious that the Avs should have more than the Predators. So that feels like the one I've just got to kind of figure out. The others, the Flyers could definitely have more shorthanded goals than the Stars. That would Don't think too many people would be surprised about that one. The Canucks having more scoring chances 4/60 on the power play than the Bruins. I'm actually pretty sure that one's true. The Bruins have not actually had a terrific power play the last little bit, despite David Pastrnak's best efforts. So that one wouldn't actually shock me. So basically, it's just between the first one and the third one, and I'm just deciding if you're trying to mess with me with the third one or trying to double mess with me with the third one.
It's all stalling tactics for everyone.
These are definitely just stalling tactics. I'm really just trying to dig inside the mind of Blake here and see what corners I can unearth and how he's thinking about this. But I think I'm going to go with the obvious. I think I'm going to say it's the lie. I think at even strength, the Nashville Predators have more expected goals 4/60 than the Colorado Avalanche.
Why are you doing this to me? All right. What are you doing? Come on. Get out of my head. All right. I think these are all pretty weird. I mean, you know, all right. You know what? This is, I'm going to have to retool. Yes. Of course you're correct, Nate. At even strength, actually, it's weird. The Nashville Predators have more expected goals 4/60. So obviously Colorado's doing some damage on the PP, mm-hmm. right? But it's close, obviously. These are all really close, right? Just to try and mess you up. Sure. But that doesn't work. Interesting. Philly has 11 shorthanded goals. Dallas has 10. So there you go. Mm-hmm. I think it's Konechny and Scotty Too Hottie Lawton, those legends. Mm-hmm. And then Vancouver Canucks, more scoring chances 4/60 than the Bruins. That's interesting to me as well. I mean, you know, but yeah, you called it. What the hell? What are you doing? You're like Rain Man. All right. You know it, but I don't know. There's got to be a better word. Hockey Man. Nah, that's too, I'm going to work on this, but yeah, well done to you. 5-3 book it. It's done. Yeah. Put a fork in me. It's over.
All right. Well, yeah, I don't know if 5-3 constitutes Rain Man status or not, but I'll take the W wherever I can get it. That's for sure. All right, Blake, what do you say? Should we get into this mailbag?
Let's get into it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
All right. So first up, we wanted to tackle these strategy topics. So actually, Blake, why don't you hang on to these? I know a couple of these are actually things you wanted to talk about. So let's start there.
Yeah, absolutely. This is stuff that I actually get pretty stoked to talk about, because I don't know about you, Nate, but like, especially towards the end of the year here, like just talking about the streamers all the time, it's like, it gets a little long. You know, you talk about the same guys, especially the way that this season has ended. It's all Colorado. It's all Anaheim. It's all weird Philly players, like, you know. So yeah, I'm kind of excited. This is what I'm looking forward to in the off season to kind of get into, really, is like kind of the strategy of fantasy hockey. So while I got you, I thought I'd pick your brain a little bit. All right. So couple things, just questions of mine that I thought we could maybe talk about next season. Just this is something I thought about all last season and draft season, and I'm, you know, still trying to figure out a little bit in my own brain, but value over replacement. How much stock do you put into that? Like, and for example, a guy like Cale Makar, I know you were really high on drafting him a little higher, kind of as a value over replacement, because he's so much better potentially than the other defensemen. How has your thought on that changed, or is that still kind of is that a strategy you employ when you go into draft season?
Yeah, it definitely is. Like for example, I took Roman Josi in a couple of spots, and to be honest, that panned out pretty well. I think Yossi's definitely a caliber of defenseman that you can take in the second round, and he's not going to hurt you. The basic way that just for anyone who's listening and wondering exactly how we would define value over replacement, the basic way I like to talk about it is just think about, like, in a points league where the only thing you're worrying about is total points scored. Just think about, you know, there's 10 teams in your league and you're rostering 6 forwards and 4 defensemen, just to use some round numbers. So that means you're rostering 60 forwards in the league and 40 defensemen. And we know that there are a lot more fantasy relevant forwards than there are defensemen. So even though there's a few more forwards, 60 forwards being rostered at any given time versus 40 defensemen, we know that the 60th forward is probably going to provide a lot more fantasy punch than the 40th defenseman. And so the argument for value over replacement becomes taking more of those early defensemen, because they're going to outproduce the 41st defenseman a lot more than the lower down forwards are going to outproduce the 61st forward, right? So you're kind of thinking about Cale Makar. If Cale Makar scores at a point per game level, if he scores 82 points in a season, but the 41st defenseman in that league scores, let's say, 30 points in a season, then that's 52 points over replacement that Cale Makar is giving you, right? Versus some forward that you could take in the first round, maybe he's getting you 100 points on the season, and the 61st forward is actually getting you like 65 points, so you're only getting 35 points over replacement from that forward in the first round. So that's kind of the basic idea. Obviously, there's a lot more context and a lot more variables that get introduced. If you have categories league with banger cats introduced, then that muddies the waters more, and so on and so forth. But that's the basic premise of the idea of value over replacement. And so for me personally, I do really value top tier defensemen, I would say, very highly. Players that I consider to have top power play jobs pretty much locked down and have a track record of production, basically. So for a long time, that's been Josi, that's been Carlson, guys like that, right? Victor Hedman was one for a long time. Until this past season, and we'll probably talk about that a little bit later on as well. But I do really value the top end defenseman a fair bit more than it seems the competition does. And I really try to get at least two of those top end defensemen, those guys that I consider to be absolute studs that I expect to stay on my roster all season long. I really try to get at least a couple of those and try to put that value over replacement in place, while still leaving some room, you know, to pick up, you know, the Brandon Montour of the season, who breaks out in a big way and ends up being a massive contributor.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's just something like I thought about it a lot last year, and I'm seeing it a little bit just in my own leagues. Like, I've been kind of sifting through the rubble of my, you know, fantasy teams and what went well and what didn't. And, you know, I noticed some value over replacement stuff. And also, like, does that sort of carry on to like positional scarcity? So not just defensemen as a scarce position, but like right wingers, let's say. Do you know, they were very scarce, obviously, you know, well, ones that perform well fantasy wise this last season. Did you put any stock into that as well?
I did a little bit. It does depend a lot on your roster settings, in my opinion, how you're going to attack the forward positions. If you have multiple utility spots, or I forget what Fantrax calls them, but basically spots that you could put any player, any position in.
Skater spots, I think.
Skater spots, I think that's what it is. Yeah. So if you have multiple positions, just that you can put anyone into, then that really changes the dynamic. If you have a, like, Yahoo standard, right, is two centers, two left wing, two right wing, 4D, no utility spot. So that really puts a significant emphasis on positional scarcity, because you don't want to be left in the cold with none of the useful right wingers. And it also puts a huge emphasis on multi-eligible players, being able to flex those players around your lineup and maximize your games played by making sure that, you know, if you have three left wings or four centers or something like that, and they're all playing on the same night, then you just can't play them. But if you have guys that also have multi-eligibility, and you can play them at right wing, or you can play them at left wing and center, or, you know, you have that multi-eligibility, then you have that many more ways to get them into your lineup. So those kind of things I definitely do value pretty highly, especially in setups where you really can't put anyone into a utility spot, and so you're really bound by those strict definitions, center, left wing, right wing.
Yeah, I love that. Actually, that's a really good piece, just as a takeaway. Like, just take a look at, you know, if your league has these utility spots, these flex spots, these skater spots, and the more you have, the less you have to worry about, you know, positional scarcity, right? Just like Nate said, you could just pop guys in there, no problem. Obviously, dual eligibility is, you know, something I look for usually, but, you know, I ran into some weird spots this year. Like, I didn't have that thought in my mind, and I really focused on positional scarcity. I picked up right wingers like they were just going out of style. Like, I reached on Patrick Kane in the Cupful, and that burned me big time. You know, and I didn't get the right wingers in our league, the A&G league, because it was standard. And then I was benching a bunch of players. I had a bunch of centers, right? So that's just a really key takeaway, right? Like, The more utility spots you have, the less you have to worry about it. I love that. All right. Well done to you, sir. Yeah, I was going to ask as well, just, you know, on the topic of this draft season, this last season here, I faded centers quite a bit. And that was sort of a tactic that a lot of people were using. Is that something that you did? And if so, you know, would you do it again? Do you think it's going to be something that we need to do next season as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that there's kind of levels to this, right? So in the first round, I basically throw position out the window. Yeah. I'm just looking for the best player. Doesn't matter to me, you know, like some people really went overboard and they were drafting like Draisaitl over McDavid just to get that extra eligibility. Yeah. And that's not something I'm interested in, right? There's tiers to this. Like if you want to argue a Kucherov over a MacKinnon or over a Matthews just because he plays right wing versus center, then I'll hear out your argument. That might not be my personal choice. Usually in the first round, I'm literally just going by my projections and saying, you know, this is the guy that I have projected to score the most points in this setup or to cover the most categories in this setup. And so that's the guy I'm going with. I really don't think about the position of the player for the first round, probably not the second round either, unless, you know, it's two centers right off the top that I'm looking at. And then that does right. kind of creep into the back of my mind. If there's someone else in the same kind of tier that's a winger, then I'll lean that way instead. But yeah, at the top, I'm pretty much just trying to get the best player, trying to get the most floor for my team right up front. And then as you get into the later rounds, when the tiers start to really widen out, in my opinion, and there starts to be, you know, like 10 guys that all look fairly similar, then yeah, I start to lean into wingers a little bit more. I start to lean into my defensemen and get that core built up of defensemen that I like to have. And then I'm always confident that there's going to be a guy like I got Bo Horvat in like 10th rounds and stuff like that, right?
So we don't talk about him anymore, all right? He's yeah. trash in Vancouver right now. What a dingus. Bo, you don't know, all right? You stink, buddy. Get the hell out of my sight. Making the playoffs with the Islanders. Anyways, carry on.
Yeah, I should have chosen.
Yeah, it's a trigger warning. You didn't give me any trigger warning on that, Nate, and that's on you, buddy. All right, let's move on.
That's true. I apologize. But yeah, that's the general feel. So early in the draft, don't really think about it too much. In the mid rounds, like to lean into wingers a little bit, especially that dual eligibility. And then I'm pretty confident that later on I'll be able to find a few centers to fill out the bottom end of the lineup.
There you go. All right, looks like we got a good question. A couple stuff in here. Yeah, check this out. Maybe we can segue into what we want to talk about next.
All right. Yeah, we got Mr. C saying, could you speak briefly about 0G? Does that mean you're not drafting any goalies? Are you drafting one decent goalie, adding one with like a final pick? And we did have this as a question that came up in the Discord as well. A couple different people were talking about, you know, can we name some 0G candidates for next season? So yeah, just right off the top, definition of 0G once again, for anyone who's unfamiliar, 0G is really just about spending less draft capital on goalies than your opponents in your leagues, because goalies are so variable week to week, month to month, year to year. So the idea is that you can replicate a lot of goalie performance by working your waiver wire effectively throughout the season. And so you just shouldn't spend too much draft capital. It definitely doesn't mean that I'm not drafting any goalies. In a couple of leagues, now that I'm in, I would say, some majorly competitive leagues, like this past season, I only played in three leagues. I played in a keep three with a bunch of kind of industry expert people. I played in Kakupful Tier 3, which is a high level in that system, that tournament. And then I played in the Apples and Genos Patron League, which obviously everybody in there is fairly subscribed to the 0G theory. Yeah. So across those leagues, goalies were actually faded quite a bit. And I ended up with Connor Hellebuyck on a couple teams in, like, I think the 10th round he fell to. And at that point, Hellebuyck actually has way more upside than any skater you can take at that point. So it just makes total sense to take him. So definitely it's not, you know, don't take any goalie at any cost. It's really just about not overspending on goaltenders relative to your league and trying to exploit that advantage where you know that throughout the course of the season, you're going to be able to find multiple guys to string together throughout the year and to kind of work the position that way. I don't know if, Blake, you want to jump in there before we talk about the specific candidates.
It's interesting. I love drafting, in the A&G Patron League, because you know good goalies are going to be available way late. It's insane. Like, you know, I 100% next season, I'm going to be going 0G with all my teams. I made that decision. I just think it's smart, just basically what Nate just said. But in the A&G Patron League, I like to go full G. I like to get the G's. I like to get them, at a reasonable level. Like, actually, I was, looking at that league, and I got Saros, who was terrible, really. But in the A&G league, where did he finish? He finished at 43. That's not bad. 43 mm-hmm. for Saros after that season. That's stinky. And then Georgiev, I picked up at 115, like round 10 or something. He finished at 19. So, like, I had two of the top four goalies in that league because I picked Saros a little earlier, you know, which I didn't actually expect him to do very well. But Georgiev was definitely 0G in that, and yeah, he peaked at 19, which is insane. So I think it's a great strategy. Let's get into these picks that we have here for 0G. I can start, Nate, if you like.
Yeah, hit it.
Yeah, I got just a couple. I mean, I'm not the 0G expert, although actually, you know, Nate, he doesn't really look at the goalies, right? He's just throwing stuff at a wall and seeing what sticks, right? He basically just puts all the goalies up on a wall and just throws some darts at it, and then he makes his decision. So I don't know. So 0G candidates for me, I mean, it's way early, but it's kind of fun to just extrapolate what we think. Guys that were amazing this year, like Philip Gustafson, holy. I'm a big fan of that guy. And next season, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury is there for one more season. He's signed on, and he's got no trade clause or no movement clause. So I don't know. It could be another year in Minnesota like it is this year, like maybe a 50-50 sort of. I think they should lean Gustafson. Like, it makes total sense. The guy's the superior goalie at this point in his career, but maybe they don't. And I don't know. Gustafson, maybe people will stay away from him. Like, that's a guy you might pick up in a 10th round, 9th or 10th round. You pick up Philip Gustafson, you're laughing your brains out. Right. And then someone in the Discord mentioned Logan Thompson. I think that, you know, he wouldn't be a 0G option if it wasn't to me for his injury riddled season. Right. Like, there's going to be low expectations for him going in because he didn't really. I mean, he proved something. He proved that he could be the number one there. But then he's been out. Like, people forget. Right. They're fickle. They'll be like, you know, what have you done for me lately? Like, who's the starter there? Jonathan? Like, no. It's Logan Thompson. He's going to be the starter, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a good team. So I think, you know, Thompson might be available late. And then just some fun picks. Akira Schmid in New Jersey. I'm just keeping an eye on that guy because their goaltending there, it's one of their weakest links, honestly. Like, with Vanecek and Blackwood, to me, like, no one really took the reins. Like, Vanecek had to take the reins because Blackwood was injured, right? But no one's like just taking the ball and running, right? And then you got this guy Schmid come in, and he's got one of the coolest names in the NHL, right? So that's number one, all right? He had some amazing numbers. His goals saved above average, like, very respectable. You know, he had an insane win streak at one point there. So I like Schmid. I'm interested in what they're doing in New Jersey. Like, I would watch the goaltending situation there because they're both, you know, they don't have no move contracts. They're both on very reasonable contracts. So I don't know. What if they like just drop those guys or trade them and they go with Schmid? Like, I could see them doing that. So that's an interesting guy. And then lastly, in Buffalo, I think someone in the Discord mentioned Devin Levi. Yeah. I mean, have a look at him. Like, what they've run four goalies in there for the season. That's crazy. So, you know, and I like UPL. He was a good 0G option this year. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. I like to say that. I just, any chance you get to say it, you got to say it. Whoever's taking the reins there in Buffalo, yeah, we should be looking at that person. And then, sorry, I did want to mention Alex Lyon as well. In Florida, as Bobrovsky. Whenever I say Bobrovsky, I think of like a detective in like a 90s. You know, like, hey, Bobrovsky, what are you doing? You forgot to fill out the paperwork, Bobrovsky. So that's kind of where that actually like tracks, because every time Bobrovsky, I have him rostered, that's my feeling and energy towards him, because the man will let in a touchdown on any given night. It's insane. Buddy, you won a Vezina. Like, what the hell are we doing? But anyways, I'm rambling on Bobrovsky. Alex Lyon, all right? You know, I think that is, you know, with Spencer Knight, like it's a question mark, right? Just the way, you know, Jakub Vrána was a question mark this year. Like you don't know how long things take when someone's in the player assistance program. So, you know, Spencer Knight, I would say, would be the 0G option at this point. And he kind of, I thought he was this year, but it just didn't really work out that way. So now Alex Lyon has come in and he's taken the Lyon's share of work there. yeah. So anyways, those are my 0G picks. Nate, I'll put it over to you. What do you got to say for yourself?
Yeah. So the way I think about it, at least at this point in the season, is I'm really just thinking about teams that could potentially take a step. Similar to New Jersey this year, like Vanecek was not terrific, but he was a pretty solid 0G option pretty much all year. Just because New Jersey took that step and therefore their goalies were worth rostering. Kind of the same thing in Seattle where, basically whoever was getting a run, Grubauer or Jones, whenever they were playing, they were getting wins. And so they were useful for fantasy. You can think about the Kings, Quick was awful and, as soon as Phoenix Copley came in and just provided like pretty average or maybe even slightly below average goaltending, like he was useful for fantasy. Like that's how it goes, right? So I'm really just thinking about these situations for next year where I think that the team could take a step and that can make their goaltender really, really valuable. So the teams that I had written down, Ottawa being the top one, I think they're kind of just some defense away and maybe a little bit better of a coach that's not just going to focus on offense so much. I don't want to say too much about coaching. It's a variable thing to me and not something that I've dug into a whole lot, but just more of a defensive mindset could really turn their goaltending situation, could turn someone into a star if they got the right piece in there, whoever that might end up being. I do still hold a candle out for Anton Forsberg, for what he gave us in that stretch run last year, but we'll see if he sticks around and is able to replicate any of that magic. Whoever it would be in Ottawa, I would be interested in them because I think that's an up and coming team that, you know, now with Chychrun, Shabbat, and Sanderson as kind of a three-headed monster on defense, I think they're headed in the right direction. Unfortunately for my Leafs and everyone else in the Atlantic Division to have another team that looks to be on the up and up coming through. So Senators being one team, the Kings being the other team, like seems like a really fluid situation in that goal crease with Copley and with Korpisalo this year, and who knows what it's going to be like next year. So whoever it ends up being for that team next year, I'd be very interested in. Seattle, again, they have Grubauer signed for a while yet because they gave him a ridiculous contract. But, like, I don't think Grubauer this year, he's had stretches where he's been all right. Currently in a stretch where he's playing pretty well for the last week. But the overall consensus, I think, has to be that unless somebody really steps up in the playoffs here and kind of cements themselves for next year, that they're going to go add somebody to this room. And whoever that is could get a good run. So I'd be interested in that. Buffalo, I did have in here, same as you, same thought process as with Ottawa, really. Like, we saw the offense come together this year. They really just need the defense to step up, and then that could be a really valuable situation for a goaltender, whether it's Levi, whether he goes back down and it's UPL for another season or somebody like that. Whoever it is, I'd be interested. And then I want to say Toronto as well, just because, you know, you have Samsonov there who is only on a one-year contract, right? So it's very unknown what's going to happen with him. I wouldn't even want to begin to guess. They don't have a ton of money. They've intentionally not put a lot of money towards goaltending for sure.
Right.
So who knows what that situation is going to be. They still have Matt Murray for next season who's signed there, but I don't think he's been terrific this year. So, and obviously the injury problems have been there. So they're definitely going to bring someone in who they feel can at least share the load there. So whether that's Samsonov or whether that's somebody completely new, whoever that other piece is opposite Murray, I'm definitely very interested in playing alongside them there in Toronto.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting what they do in the offseason there. Like with the Leafs, especially with their playoffs, like it reminds me of Edmonton sort of, like they're both kind of in the same boat, like this insane offensive juggernaut. And like, you know, I mean, in Edmonton, Stuart Skinner finally, you know, playing well, you know, for a good stretch, but I don't know. Samsonov, is he going to be the guy, do you think, in Toronto there? Like, at least for the playoffs, you think he's good enough to kind of get them where they need to go?
I think he's good enough. I think goaltending in general is pretty overrated in the NHL. There are a few difference makers, like your Vasilevskis and your Shesterkins. And then everybody else pretty much exists in a continuum in the middle, and then everybody else below that is actively hurting the team. So I think he's good enough to not be the problem, basically, I guess, is what I'm saying. So we'll see. We'll see where it ends up after the season. But yeah, that's my take for the playoffs anyway. All right, we got to keep rolling here. We're 30 minutes in, and we got to talk about this last week of the fantasy season. So quick week rundown. Monday, we've got 10 games. Tuesday, 10 games. Wednesday, there's only 3 games. Thursday, 15 games. Only 2 teams not playing that night. And Friday, just 2 games to close out the year. So we had a Twitter question from Michael Fiddler. He says, I'm in a stats league. Finals this week, need hits and blocks. And he only has one move left. His only open position is defense for the Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Any thoughts on who would be a good pickup? He said he was thinking Samuelson, Hakanpa, or Fabro. Any thoughts or other suggestions? I got my take, but Blake, you got any thoughts here quickly?
Oh, you got to go with that beef for Yanni Hakanpa. Oh, yeah. But you know what? Honestly, there's so many guys that can get you these statistics. I would choose the one that's getting the most deployment. Like, get the guy that's out there for the longest, right? Because, you know, and it doesn't matter if they have a bad matchup, that's almost better, right? If it's like a guy like Mario Ferraro on San Jose, like that team's going to get demoed for like 3 straight games, you know, get this guy out here blocking shots, hitting guys, he's getting pissed off, you know, and he's got a beautiful mustache, right? And so I like guys that are getting some deployment. So for me, you know, I think I actually responded to this on Twitter because I can't read. But yeah, guys like, you know, Scott Mayfield, right? Like, great guy on the island, right? He's going to do something. And I do like Mario Ferraro, but Hakanpaa's awesome. It's just his deployment. He's under 20 minutes. I'm not loving that, but you know, and then what is it? It's for Monday, Wednesday. Is that right?
Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. He's got openings.
So, go pick up. Yeah. How about Eric Johnson? Yeah. Oh, man, this guy's B for Sutherland. He's going to get out there just like, you know, like he's in 24. He's going to assassinate people on the ice. All right. He's going to put him through the glass. Eric Johnson. Yeah. But again, his deployment is insanely bad, but he does a lot with it. He reminds me of like Luke Shen kind of guy. Right. So, yeah, those are the guys I would kind of look at there.
Yeah, so I just kind of ran a quick look back over the last 10 games just to kind of get an even keel idea of where these guys have been performing lately. Nice. In those two categories specifically, the one that stuck out the most was Fabro, just a ton of minutes, and he's using those minutes to collect hits and blocks. So I do think Fabro would be my pick. With Nashville, you're getting the Monday and you're getting the Friday, so 2 games in those 2 nights that you're looking at. The other option is Ferraro for me. I do think that Ferraro is a good option as well. It plays the Monday and the Wednesday. So again, you're getting the same amount of games out of him just on different nights. Definitely both of those guys to me fill those categories, would do roughly the same thing. I gave a slight edge to Fabro, but I'm pretty ambivalent between the two. The other one I thought about was Mayfield, who also plays Monday and Wednesday. Mayfield also has 6 points in his last 10 games, but his hits and blocks aren't quite as high. So, you know, a little bit hot on the point production side, but a little bit less on the hits block side if you're trying to kind of round things out a little bit more. So those would be the 3 guys for me.
Nice.
All right. So we're going to talk quickly here just about a few players that we like with decent schedules for the week. Some players that you might be able to pick up and might be able to do something for you. Just going to hit this real quick. If you got to this point, you've probably already used the majority of your moves. So it's probably pretty cut and dried what you have to accomplish with your last ad or your last couple ads this week. So we're not going to belabor the point here, but we are going to give you a few guys that we like and why. So Blake, who are your guys here?
Let's get to biz. Yeah, you got it. So you're looking at best schedule, obviously, is going to be Buffalo and Colorado, at least for games played, but you might not be able to get these players in. Obviously, the Monday, Tuesday have the 10 games going there, but let's see what's up. Casey Mittelstadt, I think that's that's really the best and only option. You know, I mean, you can take flyers on the other guys on Buffalo, but Casey Mittelstadt, you know, obviously he's got 11 points in his last seven games, so that's nice. But Tage Thompson came back last game, and Casey Mittelstadt stayed, you know, reasonably deployed, right? You know, in that game, I believe he played, I had it up here. What the hell's wrong with me? Yeah, he played second power play, so that's fine. But he also played with Alex Tuch and Jeff Skinner. So he took Tage's spot there. They kept him on that line, and he did well, right? He got a bunch of points. So yeah, Casey Mittelstadt, I like him. Owen Power as well. Yeah, he's picking up his game at the right time, and he might be out there, right? You know, hopefully these guys are available to you. But I think for Buffalo, those are the two guys you're looking for. What did I have next? Boston Bruins. Yeah, they've got a great strength of schedule, and Boston is resting a ton of players just like they did tonight. It's insane. You know, I'm trying to help people on Twitter. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, go pick up Orlov. That's great. No, they're going to rest Orlov. All right. With McAvoy rested. So what the hell, you know, it's pissing me off. But yeah, guys like Tyler Bertuzzi had a big game tonight. He was playing with pasta. All right. He was playing with his pasta. You shouldn't do get it all over your face. All right. Giggity. but let's Tyler Bertuzzi, Pavel Zacha, those guys are going to be awesome. And then, I mean, you can go down the lineup, right? Everybody's getting more deployment with all the guys they're resting for the playoffs there. And lastly, I would say Minnesota. Minnesota plays, what do they play? Monday, Tuesday, and then they play Thursday, that beefer game. So you probably have to jump off somebody there, but you're looking at Ryan Hartman and Marcus Johansson, actually, who I like even more than Hartman at this point. They're playing him on power play one. Yeah, he's getting good deployment. He's putting some points on the board, and he's probably out there, right? So those are the players that I'm kind of looking at, you know, for the rest of my week here.
Yeah, I would definitely say Mittelstadt is number one for me, as long as he's on that top line, and if you can get him for that Monday, Tuesday, and the Friday, if you're getting him in for all three games, he's probably the only guy definitely worth rostering that you can get in for three games this week. So he's a clear tier above for me of all these guys. If you can, the only other guy from Buffalo that I would add to the list that I have some passing interest in is Jordan Greenway. If you're in a much deeper league, he does have over 11 shots for 60 in his last five games, was playing on that line with Tage Thompson in the last game. So that's a plus for him. And then obviously you get the three games there, and he does hit as well. So he bangs.
He bangs. There you go.
The other few guys that I'll run through here, Jesperi Kotkaniemi showed up for me, 13.9 shots for 60 over his last five and 4 points. So that shows up well. He does play the Monday, Tuesday against Ottawa and Detroit. So nothing too scary there in terms of opponents. So I do like Kotkaniemi if you can get him in for both the Monday and Tuesday. Andreas Athanasiou, 12.7 shots for 60, and he's scored 7 points his last five games. Pretty under
that's surprising.
The radar over there in Chicago. Yep. Yeah. Also playing Monday, Tuesday, so you get those two games from him. Evan Rodriguez, obviously Colorado, was on line one. I haven't actually checked to see if he's still on line one in this game tonight that they're playing.
That's what I saw on Twitter, he was, yeah.
Yeah, looks like he is not on the top power play, but on line one with Rantanen and McKinnon, which is obviously prime deployment. He plays the Tuesday and Friday, aside from the Thursday that you're probably not going to fit him in for. So if you have your Monday full, but you have a spot on Tuesday, then Rodriguez makes a lot of sense as someone that you can fit in for Tuesday, and then obviously on the Friday off night. And then Kirill Marchenko is another guy. Same schedule there. Tuesday and Friday is what you'll get him in for. They're playing Philadelphia and Buffalo, so definitely teams you can score on. Marchenko, one of the few guys on Columbus who's actually scoring goals this year. Line one, power play one, 12.2 individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 his last five games. Definitely meets a lot of criteria for me as somebody I'd be interested in for a stream. And Jacob Peterson is the last one here. Pretty much a no-name. He's going to be widely available, playing on San Jose. Monday, Wednesday is his schedule this week, aside from the Thursday heavy night. He has 5 points his last five games, line one, power play one. It's a shot in the dark. His underlying stats are not nearly as good, but he's getting the deployment. So if you're in the deepest of leagues, then Jacob Peterson is an option that I would consider. Any thoughts on those? Who sticks out to you from that list, Blake?
Marchenko over Boone Jenner? What is happening? Why are you doing this? Oh my God. I could not. I tried my best. Boone Jenner, 38% roster on Yahoo. I don't think we're going to make 40, my guy. I'm sorry. I failed you. And, you know, next season, I'm going to campaign for this man. Seriously. I got to get him, you know, I have to meet him in person and, you know, get some, just some banter going back and forth and put his face out there. You know, we need a little more media for Boone Jenner, because what the hell? Yeah, I like Marchenko too, actually, but he's good. But Boone Jenner, come on. Oh, my God. Yeah, no. And then Peterson? Is he playing on a line with Noah Gregor? Because who the hell are these people? Like, what's going on? Are they going to even that's be on the team much. Next year? Yeah.
That's pretty much it in San Jose there. No, he's playing with Hurdle and LeBanc on the top line, and then what's left of the top power play there.
Well, that's not bad. The Ninja Hurdle. I like that guy. All right, let's carry on.
All right, we will get into the third part of the mailbag, and that is, as we alluded to before, individual player projections for next year. Let's kick it right off. Slevel asks about Kalen Addison. Blake, I'll let you lead off with this one.
Yeah, I was excited about Addison this year. I thought there was a good chance. I mean, he's clearly an offensive player. The way he sort of profiled to me throughout the year, though, was kind of like, I know I've mentioned this guy before and I forgot his name before. That Hobie Baker winner that went to New Jersey, Butcher, like Will Butcher.
Yeah, Will Butcher.
Yeah. Yeah. That's who this guy reminds me of. Like, he's not doing anything peripherally. He's good offensively. I don't know. He's a little better than Will Butcher, I think. You know, he had a reasonable season, but his deployment stunk the whole season. So that says to me, they really don't have any confidence in this guy defensively. Like, they're not putting him out there in situations, you know, where he could get in trouble, right? So, I mean, we're going to need to see if he can do that before we get excited about Kalen Addison. That said, John Klingberg, the Klingon, he's UFA next season. So, you know, if they don't sign him again, he's in their power play one right now. So behind him is Addison, really. I mean, or Jared Spurgeon, yeah. Right? Which, you know, I'm sure they'd rather have a more offensive guy running the power play, right? And that's what Addison is, and they've done it before, and they'll probably do it again. I just don't think they're going to, you know, we got a Tony D'Angelo situation here. Tony D'Angelo, not even Tony D'Angelo yet. He's not even Tony D'Angelo status yet. So I do like Addison, but I mean, if he plays a full season, I think we're looking at 30 to 40 points probably.
Yeah. He is getting the Tony D'Angelo treatment and getting scratched, though. So they do have that.
I don't like
common.
That. Yeah, that's nice.
Overall, yeah, I'm not high on Addison anymore. Right. The opportunity was there, and honestly, just didn't take it, I guess, is the conclusion we basically have to draw from what we saw throughout this season. The fact that they went out and got Klingberg, pretty clearly stating that at least for this season, they're not interested in Addison being that guy. Next season, you know, it's a brand new season. He'll obviously be given a list of things he needs to work on, and maybe he can, maybe he can't. I'm not betting on it. So overall, I would say that my view of Addison has taken a downward turn throughout this season. The offensive potential is definitely still there. I do believe that, you know, given 22 minutes a night, line one, power play one, yeah, kind of usage, that this would definitely be a valuable player for fantasy in the mold of somebody like a Klingberg. Not much for peripherals, but definitely for points. He could be like a 50-point player if all that went right for him. But really, from what we've seen this year, I don't know how you could possibly project that in his future. So, yeah, that's where I'm at with Addison. Still some hope, but definitely it's less hope than I had at the beginning of the year. Number two from Agent Orange, Dawson Mercer. So Mercer definitely had an interesting season, was elevated at times to the top line, top power play, and definitely had a pretty good streak there where he really showed out and was the hottest player in the NHL for a hot minute. But overall, it's still, you know, if you look at the end of season numbers, it's not like right. Stunning numbers for Dawson Mercer, right? So what's the thought here? Obviously still a very young player, player with a lot of track left ahead of him, and still definitely a player that you would imagine is on the upswing of his career. So what's the prognosis moving forward, Blake, from your side?
Yeah, I like this player a lot. I mean, you know, it's a long season and these are young guys, right? They're getting their feet in the water and they're figuring things out, right? And Dawson Mercer, what's neat about him, he's going to play two full seasons, like two 82-game seasons for Dawson Mercer. Like he's an actual, like that's two full seasons, not just in and out of the lineup. Like, you know, he played a very similar time, or the exact same time on ice, 16 minutes, 32 seconds time on ice average for the whole season. That's nice deployment for a young kid like this. I think there's a breakout coming. I mean, you know, if I'm really getting spicy, I think this guy could be good for 80, you know, this, like, obviously, to me, and I know what you're going to say, and I agree with you, is that the advanced stats don't really show a player that has done this at this point. But, you know, I was looking up guys like Tage Thompson and a couple other guys, and I'm not comparing him to Tage Thompson, but I think, like, the stats don't always, like, you know, a player can make that switch. And I think at times this year, Dawson Mercer having first off, the time on ice that he's been receiving, especially in the last third of the season here, he's up around 18, 20 minutes, like, at times here. He's getting good deployment with good players. You know, obviously New Jersey has brought in Timo Meier, and that was a big deal for them. And so they're still kind of, I feel like they're still trying to kind of figure out how to all play together, right? Because Meier is a guy that has gravity, and, you know, he's played a certain way, and he was the main guy in San Jose. So I don't know. I like, if he gets access to Heischer or Jack Hughes, what, like, we're looking at a 70 to 80 point player, in my opinion. And obviously some things are going to have to change. He's going to have to shoot the puck more, like put some shots on net, my guy. Like, you know, he averaged two shots a game, which is, it's not great. It's not what you want to see for, like, an elite offensive option. Right. But I don't know. I think his power time could go up, right? He only played a minute and 19 average on ice on the power play. So we put that, double that. Let's double that. Let's get him some more power play points. Let's get him some confidence. I like the player. I think 70 to 80 is something that can happen. I mean, that's a hot take, right? I'm not saying that's a lock, and I'm not, you know, drafting him at that value, right? I'm trying to get him later on for that value. But I do like the player, and I think his future is really bright. And he's in his third full year. That's breakout season, baby. That's time. I think Dawson Mercer is going to have a good one.
Yeah, I like Mercer to some extent, definitely for the kind of breakout you're talking about. He definitely has to stick in the top six all year, definitely has to stick on the top power play. There definitely will be a spot, most likely, after Meier moves on this offseason, I would imagine. So Mercer, in my mind, is clearly the next most talented offensive player that they have. So I'd like to see it go to him, but we've all seen we've seen the myth of assuming rational coaching in the NHL come back to bite us more times than once. So I do keep that as a bit of a cautionary tale for myself. You know, 7.2 shots per 60 on the season, not terrific. He did go hot in spurts and then just disappear for spurts, which is both concerning and exciting in a weird kind of way, where you see that he can do it and do it for more than just, you know, two games, but actually do it for 10 or 12 game stretches. But then you wonder why he absolutely falls off the map for some periods of time. So he's got to figure that out. Could just be, you know, it's a young player figuring out his way in the league. So I don't discount that possibility. Definitely, this is a player that I would consider to have upside to the levels that you're talking about. That wouldn't shock me if, you know, he takes a step next year, goes up to 9 shots per 60, gets all that deployment that we're talking about, adds, you know, this year 16.5 minutes average time on ice, next year 18 minutes time on average time on ice, and now we're in business, right? If he adds
now we're cooking.
Play one. So definitely don't discount the possibility. Wouldn't draft him at ceiling like that, but definitely if you can draft him as, you know, a back end of your roster player, then you're definitely drafting somebody with upside for a lot more. So I'm about that. Got to keep rolling. We got to answer D-Bark Skinner. He's asking about Rasmus Dahlin. Obviously a huge, massive breakout season for Dahlin, along with a bunch of different Buffalo Sabres, if we're being honest. So Dahlin, Blake, what's the story here? Do we trust the new numbers, the new norm that Dahlin has set for himself this year, or do we expect some regression moving into 2023-24?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Like this year was so crazy. Buffalo going from zeros to heroes, at least offensively, right? And then the opposite, like Florida just falling off a map. Really, you know, it's bizarre. So I think it's somewhere in between. But yeah, this guy's awesome. I just watched the game the other day that they played where he got I think he got a goal and two assists or something like that. The guy's electric out there. I mean, he really carries the play. Like he's, you know, eye test this. guy's elite. Like he looks great. He brings the Paris. I love that. So, I mean, he's on an 80 point pace right now. I don't think that's realistic next season. This season's been so weird with defense too. Like defense is just popping off for like, 70 points. Like it's nothing, you know, like, you know, that doesn't feel normal. So I'd need to see more of that, but I think, you know, 60 points, pretty reasonable for this player with a bunch of goals, maybe 15 goals again and 60 points. I love that. But, you know, with the offensive weapons they have here, I also think, you know, and we're going to talk about them a little later, but Dylan Cousins is primed for like a bigger role with that team and more of kind of a breakout year as well. So there's just a lot of good offensive going on in Buffalo, and hopefully they can keep it going. And this guy's the key. I think 60 points is reasonable for this guy with some awesome periffs. He's a beauty.
Yeah. I like Dahlin a fair bit. Definitely agree that 80 points like he's pacing for this year is probably the absolute ceiling. You're seeing a guy skating 25 minutes and 42 seconds average time on ice. Mm-hmm. That's obviously pretty much capping out his usage. Overall, I don't see a whole lot in his, you know, quote-unquote luck metrics, the IPP, the shooting percentage, the on-ice shooting percentage. The on-ice shooting percentage might be a touch high, 12.4%. Maybe I see that coming back to, like, somewhere in the high 11s or mid-11s next year. So, right. You know, but that's an order of, I don't know, probably something in the range of, like, 5 points, 5-6 points. You know, it's not the biggest number in the entire world. So that's definitely a reason to take a little bit off the top, but I do think like there's legitimate chance for this to be a 70 point defenseman again. I don't discount that. Improved the shots per 60 this year. Most notable for me, improved the individual scoring chances for per 60. So the shots he was taking were from more dangerous areas. So that makes me think that the 7.6 shooting percentage is more sustainable than it might be for the average defenseman. So overall, as the team goes and improves, I expect Dahlin to improve. I think 70 points is most likely. Obviously, I'll see when I do my projections where I actually come out with them. But I do think like 70 point expectation for next year is not unreasonable, especially if he continues to get 25 plus minutes a night.
But
all right. Soch asks us about Clayton Keller, who has had, I think, one of the quietest, frankly, unbelievable seasons for a terrible team that we've ever seen. You know, everybody else on that team has been injured at some point or another, and through it all, Keller has just kept on pushing and kept on clicking. It really doesn't matter who's with him. He's just found a way every single night to put up big points. So what's the take on Keller here? Is what we saw this year really sustainable moving into next year? Did he outperform somehow despite the wasteland that is the Coyotes offense?
I don't know. The Coyotes have been a fun team this year. Like, I've really enjoyed like kind of following their players, the guys like Keller, Nick Schmaltz, you know, the Juice Box, Yusuf Alamaki. They just have a plethora of like young players. Right. And just, I don't know, Keller, to me, I still think he's probably going to go underrated next year. It's weird. Like, Keller was a guy I targeted in a lot of my teams late because he was there. He was a right winger. He's left wing, right wing on Yahoo. And he was there later on. And I hate to say, like, in a couple leagues, I ended up like getting rid of him or trading him like early on in the season or something. So only on one of my teams did I actually, you know, see the fruition of Clayton Keller here, because he's had an amazing back half of the season. He's been flying, obviously. But I think this is, I don't know, it, like point per game. I don't know. Can they do it again? It's like, he's obviously clicking on the power play. He's doing some good work there. His deployment is insane, right? We're looking over 20 minutes average time on ice. So that's awesome. Who else is coming in Arizona, right? To even take any minutes. Like, he's going to be the number one guy, the number one offensive option again next year. So I like Keller for 75 to 80 points next year. I don't see if he doesn't get injured. Like, I like what I'm seeing here. He's shooting more, 2.7 shots per game. I like to see that. I don't know. I think he'll be able to get him a little bit later in drafts as well. So I'm going to be keeping my eye on this guy for sure. But a lot of those Coyotes, right? He's also on Arizona, which, you know, people have this weird bias for teams that suck. You know, when Arizona sucked for a long time, right? Anaheim sucks. Like, guys like Troy Terry and even Zegras to some degree, like they're sort of, you know, people leave them on the you know, in the draft later. And I think Keller's going to have that happen again to him this year. I like the player a lot. That's my take.
Yeah, definitely a guy who's going to get the deployment next year. Keller, to me, is a real boomer bust potential option. Mm. Really weird numbers, underlying numbers the last few years. The IPP being high doesn't scare me. He is the guy that all of the offense out there runs through, so that doesn't scare me. The shooting percentage is a little bit weird through his first four seasons in the league. Never shot higher than 11.3, then the last two seasons, 15.8 and 17.2. So either he's, you know, changed something to make him a more effective shooter, a more efficient shooter, or, you know, he's just gone through like 150 games.
He's just that good. Yeah.
Luck. So that's pretty hard to believe that a player could sustain being lucky for that long, but it is a like abrupt departure from where he was at in previous seasons. And then the on-ice shooting percentage kind of correlates. It's higher than you'd expect, but it correlates with that jump in his personal shooting percentage, which makes sense. So overall, I do think that there's a chance, you know, if the puck just doesn't bounce his way next year, that if he shoots again closer to 11, 12, even 13% than the 17% he shoots this year, that he's a pretty big disappointment overall, just because no one else is going to pick him up. He's got to be the guy who converts and is efficient, or else the whole kind of system there crumbles. So that's my take on Keller. Boomer bust player. Definitely the median projection, I think, is probably, you know, 75 to 80 points, but definitely feel like there's a pretty wide variance there too, and some definite floor, especially if they don't get, you know, Bedard or somebody really impactful to come in the draft, or if they bring up, you know, Logan Cooley or whoever's coming up. So
that would
be my take on Keller there. We got to keep rolling. We're getting to the end here.
Let's roll.
We had a bunch of guys brought in by a few of our people in the Discord. Reese's Pieces. Let's touch on a couple of these. We want to touch on Mikhail Sergachev, I think, just because of the situation there with Hedman. What's your take on the situation, Blake, and what should we expect from Sergachev next year?
Yeah, real quick. I think this is the passing of the torch this year. Although I do still like Hedman, I think this is Sergachev's role now. This is kind of what we're looking at here. I think 50, 60 points for Sergachev, and I think he's going to get that power play one deployment for most of the year, if not all of the year next season, right? Depending on what happens with Tampa in the playoffs as well, right? They're a tired team. But yeah, I like Sergachev a lot. I think, you know, he's kind of maybe smashed a bit of his value that he had in drafts this year. He's a guy I called for to be, you know, underdrafted or underrated, and he had a great season. So yeah, I like the player. 50 to 60 points, I think, is reasonable with awesome riffs.
Yeah. My take on the situation, I don't think it's locked down, but I do think that there's every chance that they just say, you know, Victor Hedman, that, you know, at your age, you don't need to be taking power play one. We've got a guy who can do that. You can focus on being our number one defenseman. We've got a guy who can run the power play just as well as you can, essentially, and it runs just fine. So I do think that that's a pretty possible place to be. I think, honestly, there's going to be some really split opinions on both Sergachev and Hedman, and so they're going to vary a lot in drafts. I might be interested in either of them, depending on where their average draft position ends up next year. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think you'll end up with base projections pretty similar for both of them, and imagine that my projections will kind of envision some sort of split where throughout the season they do trade off at one point or another with that power play one deployment. Another guy, Juuso Välimäki, who's obviously pretty interesting, really came into his own once Gostisbehere and Chychrun left town at the trade deadline, and yeah, really, like, who else is gonna play there? I think this is Välimäki's show for the time being. What's the expectation for Välimäki?
I love that. The juice box! This man's a legend. He came out of nowhere. That obviously the Chychrun trade and Gostisbehere getting out of there, you know, really elevated this guy up, and he's shown that he can handle it. I think he's a really solid defenseman. I think, you know, we're probably looking at another year though, like just with Arizona's talent, and they're like he's the number one guy, and they're doing well right now, and he's not lighting it up, you know. So I think points wise, we're probably looking at, you know, 35 to 45 points for Välimäki, and he's a good blocker, so he doesn't really hit too much, but. Yeah, I also did want to throw Sean Durzi in there. Like, they're kind of similar players, actually. Sean Durzi, LA Kings. Like, again, I think he's the guy behind Doughty on the power play there. So I think, you know, we could have like a Sergachev situation with Sean Durzi and Drew Doughty, maybe starting next season. I like Durzi a lot, so I just wanted to throw him in there. I think if Durzi gets play one, we're looking at 45 to 55 points. Valimaki, we're looking at 35 to 45. That's my take. I don't know what you got.
Yeah, just quickly, Valimaki, I think, is probably going to get a ton of minutes. Whatever you thought of Gostisbehere this past year, you should probably think similarly of Valimaki. The only thing I would say about Valimaki is that he's not as much of a shooter, not as good of a shooter as Gostisbehere. So right. It's really just kind of power play points. Think about him the same way you'd think about a Klingberg, but he does block a lot as well. So he does get that added bonus for you in Cats leagues or in leagues with a strong blocks weight. Durzi, yeah, definitely. I think there's potential there with the power play one. He's a guy who really shows up on scoring chances, which is pretty interesting. Scoring chances generated from defensemen, he shows up pretty well. So Durzi is somebody I think is really interesting. And if he ever does get the power play one, I think he'd be a smash. Could be somebody in the Sergachev vein from this past season. Definitely agree with that one. From Krager, we had another list. Have to touch on Jonathan Huberdeau, one of the biggest disappointments in fantasy that, honestly, I can ever remember, going from 115 points last year to 54 points in 77 games this year. Quick take on the situation, Blake.
It's not this bad. I honestly believe, like, you know, Sutter will be out of there at the end of the year, right? We get a new coach in there. He needs minutes. He needs deployment. I mean, you can't go down almost 3 minutes in deployment. Everything's down for Huberdeau, and it's just been worst case scenario there in Calgary. So I expect somewhere in between, like 115 points last year. I don't think that's Huberdeau. 54 points is not Huberdeau. I think he's closer to like an 80 to 90 point player, but he's going to need that deployment, and he's going to need power play one. So hopefully a new coach in there, get the biz, you know, you traded for this man, you signed him, like, you know, we got to start playing him like the player that you traded for and signed.
Absolutely. Matt Boldy, your thoughts on Matt Boldy?
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Matt Boldy a lot, and he's, you know, he really stepped up with Kaprizov out on injury there, and that bodes well. You know, that's good for his confidence, obviously, and, you know, the numbers have been there previously with advanced statistics, so I think just another year here of, you know, some success, and let's see what happens in the playoffs for the Wild, right? Like, what I always like to look at the top playoff performers, and I like to bleed that into the next season sometimes. Like, if Boldy has a really good playoffs, like, you know, his confidence could be sky high. We could be looking at a real nice player next year, hope value. But I don't know. What's your thoughts on Boldy? You like his season?
Absolutely. Love the season from Boldy. Yeah, 63-point pace at this point.
Yeah.
About 18.5 minutes per night. The underlying stats really good, especially considering who he had to play with for most of the year. In terms of, like, the luck metrics, IPP shooting percentage, on-ice shooting percentage, I see, honestly, room for improvement there. Yeah. So I do think that this is a guy who could definitely jump up into point per game or even beyond, given the right situation. I honestly was really thinking that Boldy was going to be a huge steal late in drafts, and then he had to go on this massive hot streak and put his name in the national spotlight.
So yeah, yeah.
We'll see what the discount actually looks like at the draft table next year, but Boldy is somebody I'm really interested in for next year. I do think, like, definitely, like, if you think about guys that we've talked about with that point per game potential, definitely Boldy way higher than Mercer for me. Anybody else you're thinking of with, like, I feel like Boldy's floor is what we've seen this season in terms of the full game, full season number, 63 points. Like, that's the absolute floor in my mind with Boldy. Keep in mind, this is only his second year. Like, for him to elevate the entire team basically the way he did in his second season,
took over
in the league. The sky's the limit, honestly. Like, this could be Jason Robertson that we're talking about this time next year. That wouldn't surprise me in the least. So really excited about Boldy for sure. We got to talk about Moritz Seider. Kanban was interested in that one as well. What's your thoughts on Seider? Obviously not the greatest sophomore season here.
I'll tell you what, next season, you go to the Old Mill and you get Seider, all right? This man's going to be fine. He's a defenseman, for God's sake. And he's only 6 points off his pace last year. He had a 50-point pace last year. He's got a 44-point pace this year. What the hell do you want, for God's sake? And he played half the season on power play two behind Hronek in Detroit. So, you know, you get him back on power play one. He's going to be back on power play one. He's a beefer. He He had 199 hits like this season. That's insane. 185 blocks. Yes, please. He's the same guy. You know, he's just a defenseman. He's a young defenseman. So I think, you know, let's temper expectations, right? People were picking this guy in the third round last year, including me in one league, because I'm like, I got to get one team with Moe Seider. And I was like, God dang it. Oh, geez, this is terrible. But, you know, just remember what you're drafting him for, right? You're drafting him for his periffs. Obviously, he's more valuable in cats leagues, but, you know, he could get like 40, 44 points. That's a nice season, right? I think next season, probably look at the same 50 points, Moe Seider, 55 points C maybe with amazing periffs. There you go. That's what you want to see. Go get some Seider.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely don't think that Seider, now that we have two seasons of data on him, obviously still a young defenseman, there's every chance that he takes another step at some point in the future, next year or even beyond that. Don't want to discount that, you know, the way that we saw Dahlin do it this year. That's definitely a possibility. But Dahlin always had a higher baseline than Seider, I would say, as well.
More offensive.
Definitely more offensive than Seider profiles to be at this point. I don't think Seider is a guy who influences the play the same way as Dahlin. You see that show up in his numbers as well. A guy who doesn't get to scoring chance areas as much to create his own goals. So he doesn't really give you that floor with the goal scoring. So yeah, just across the profile, it's not a guy I'd expect to ever score 60 points, even in his best season in the league. So yeah, around 50 points feels like a really strong potential for him, assuming he does get power play one, they don't bring in anyone else to kind of potentially usurp that role. All right, last question. Big guy in the house 29 and Reese's Pieces was interested in this as well. He wanted to know two or three guys that we are excited to draft next year. Let's hit this real quick, Blake. Let's go with let's toss it back and forth. I'll hit my first one, then toss it to you.
Okay, hit it. Hit it.
We're gonna go this and one sentence reason why we like this guy. So my guy up first is Kirill Marchenko. Individual scoring chances 4 per 60 through the roof for a guy in his first season.
You're loving it. All right, I'm going Nikolaj Ehlers. All right, for obvious reasons, the advanced stats, beauty. Just give this man some minutes. That's it. So I think he gets more minutes, more points. There you go.
Owen Tippett, for me, shots per 60 here through the roof. Going to have all the opportunity in the world in Philadelphia.
I think he'll be available for you, my guy. All right. I'm taking Sam Reinhart / Victor Hedman, you know, because I think they're both going to be at value in draft season because they pissed so many people off this year. You could throw Moe Seider in there too. I think all those players are going to be gettable in your draft because of their poor performance at times during this season. Okay.
Drake Batherson for me, every luck metric is well under average rate, I guess I would say, for Batherson. So Batherson for me could be a point per game player next year.
Drizzy. All right. And last, I'm going with Timmy Stutes. Oh man, I'm all over this guy next season. He's going on every team. I love this man. My favorite thing about him is his deployment. He plays an insane amount, you know, and I think his advanced stats have room for improvement as well. So I'm excited about Timmy Stutes.
All right. That's all we got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value and helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. And that's it, folks. Much love.